Amateur Traveler, episode 116. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to Costa Rica. Our guest has been writing guidebooks to Costa Rica for 15 years. Learn how the country has changed. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. The first news story I have for you today comes from USA, from the Cruise Log blog, which talks about cruising, and it has to fall in that category of you thought your vacation was bad. The headline is Passengers Mutiny on Sapphire Princess. And the article says, things didn't go well in the past couple weeks on the Sapphire Princess. In fact, according to some people on board, it was a downright disaster, prompting a quote-unquote mutiny among passengers. The trouble soon began after the ship departed Bangkok on November 18th for a 16-night cruise across Asia. The first day was sunny, but then the ship promptly ran into back-to-back typhoons, which is what they call hurricanes in that part of the world. And from all accounts, it was a grim scene. They missed half of their ports. They weren't able to stop in Vietnam at all as planned. They weren't able to stop in Taiwan or Okinawa. And the seas were so bad that the captain closed the pools and the outside decks, and everyone basically has to spend most of the cruise in rough seas in their cabins. So just remember, when you do go on a cruise, the one thing they cannot control is the weather. The second news story is more of good news. If you're planning on taking Eurostar from London to either Brussels or Paris, you may have noticed if you've taken it in the past that the high-speed train actually didn't get to be high-speed until it left almost all of England. And that has changed. The line has moved from Victoria Station to St. Pancras Station, and they have a new tunnel that was completed that is going to allow it to be a high-speed train all the way from London. And so that will cut down your time even more, which is good news for that comfortable, efficient, and somewhat expensive ride from London to either Paris or Brussels. You can find links to both of those stories at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Harry Pariser, who's come to talk to us about Costa Rica. Harry, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you doing, Chris?
Good. I'm excited to have Harry on the show because you have quite literally written the book on Costa Rica, and I have in my hand Explore Costa Rica, which is your book, and I have to say I've really enjoyed it since you sent me a copy. It is quite an extensive book about the country of Costa Rica, so I'm very pleased to have you on.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate the compliments.
You've obviously spent some time in Costa Rica. What got you there in the first place? What's the attraction with Costa Rica with you?
Well, actually, I had a publisher at the time who recommended writing a guidebook to Costa Rica because that was a destination was getting more popular. And at the time, there were only two or three guidebooks. I didn't realize that there would be 15 or 20 or however many there are at this date, you know, some 15 years later. But that's how I originally started.
As small a country as Costa Rica is, and how large is Costa Rica roughly from top to bottom?
Costa Rica is often compared to be the same size as West Virginia.
Okay. I'm stunned by how much you found to cover about such a country that is relatively small. Obviously, there's quite a lot of variation. If you only had a week or two to spend in Costa Rica, what would you recommend that people do?
Well, first of all, I think that people make a big mistake by going to Costa Rica and trying to see too much, or any country for that matter.
Sure.
I think that it's better just to go to a couple places, pick one area out of the country. If you have to, fly there and fly back, or go by land one way and then fly back, or just go by bus both ways, or by rental car if you prefer. I think that it really depends upon your interests.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Costa Rica is best suited, say, to bird watchers, people who enjoy nature. You can see a lot of colorful birds. You're not going to see those large mammals other than monkeys for the most part, but you will see leafcutter ants are the only ants that farm. They pick up leaves and through a very complicated social system transmit them back to their nest and feed them to fungi who have a symbiotic relationship with them, as do many insects and plants in Costa Rica. And so these things are really interesting. I think that there are other places you can go that perhaps have better beaches. And you can certainly see an active volcano in lots of other countries. But one thing that Costa Rica has is because it's on an isthmus, that is between North and South America, so acting kind of as a funnel. So the Costa Rica and its neighboring countries have quite a bit more biodiversity than you find in most other countries, and especially mm-hmm. in the tropics, because there's no winter, so things don't die. There's quite a bit of biodiversity, and there's also an astonishing amount of biodiversity per square acre, because some plants will be found in just one little patch that aren't found anywhere else, and they're continually discovering new species.
And when we think about the nature in Costa Rica and we think about rainforests, for instance, there's different types of rainforests in Costa Rica, is my understanding.
This is true. And these are different types of tropical forests. So this cloud forest is a little bit more stunted, fewer animals, that's up higher. And then there's tropical rainforest. There's tropical dry forest, which you find in the northwest of Costa Rica, mainly in the Guanacaste National Park and the mm-hmm. Santa Rosa National Park. Then there's something called littoral forest. But that run rainforest is really just one type of lowland forest. It's more or less one variety, I think, when you think of rainforest. But there are many other varieties. And also there's quite a bit of difference between primary forest and secondary forest. And you need a trained eye to see the difference.
And one of the things that I thought was interesting, one fact you had in your book, you talk in the introduction, which is 100-some pages long, covering a lot of overview of both the natural and the history and such of Costa Rica. Certainly, you are a strong proponent for saving the rainforest. It comes across very clear in the book. But not for the reason that most people state of it being the lungs of the planet.
So I say the rainforests are not the lungs of the planet because the mature trees produce as much oxygen as they consume. But the danger in destroying the rainforest lies with the effects of the rainfall, flooding, and global warming resulting from increasing amounts of carbon dioxide being released into the atmosphere. One of the problems is we need a rationale for things. And to me, nature is its own rationale. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people are in denial that man is part of an ecosystem, that we can only survive as part of an ecosystem. We have symbiotic relationship with all these microbes that are running around on our bodies, and we, in fact, digest our food, I believe, only because we have those symbiotic relationships. Similarly, we might not see the results right away with species going extinct, but there is an effect on other plants and so forth that require fertilization. For example, honeybees, which there are problems with, are fertilizing a lot of species, as are bats. Mm-hmm. So the relationships are much more complicated than we think, and it's not simply that, species can disappear and there are no consequences, because I think there are consequences to all of us. In addition, we don't know what medicines might be in those plants at that acre is being bulldozed to build villa for retirees or whatever.
Right. With Costa Rica, if someone wants to go down and they want to see some of the wonderful landscape and such, how do you recommend someone approach it? Should they just hop on a plane and head down to San Jose and wing it from there? Do you recommend going with a guide, or how would you recommend we tackle the country?
I have a set of travel suggestions on my website in PDF form, but I do think that, for example, if you're on a low budget, you could plan some months in advance and try to do some work exchange with somebody. If you have the money, then I would recommend staying at one of the many rainforest lodges and try to stay one, two, or three that aren't too far apart from each other. So you don't have to spend all of your time traveling, and I would be less concerned with nightlife or with good food or things like that, that you can sort of find other places, and try to take advantage of the fact that there are innumerable small hotels, lodges, and community-run projects for tourists where locals have built modest lodges and take tourists in, and you kind of get to see the country view of life. So that would be my recommendation. There are a lot of expensive resorts going up there and so forth, but there isn't a real necessity to visit Costa Rica if that's where you're going to stay, because you can find that elsewhere. And for the most part, if you're going to want to see wildlife, you're going to have to get a bit muddy, you have to get some mosquito bites, you have to get up early in the morning. None of those things may be fun, but they're also fulfilling.
Can you describe what was your favorite day in Costa Rica?
Yeah, I can think of a really memorable day, which
okay.
is one day that I hiked out to a place called Punta Mona from Manzanillo. This is a really beautiful area south of Puerto Viejo de la Talamanca on the Caribbean coast. There's a type of sustainable lodge or cooperative there, and I went by there and I kept going and I wanted to get out to the main road. And I passed by and I couldn't bring myself to turn around. It was just too beautiful there to turn around, and I kept walking, and eventually I found myself in a banana plantation, and started getting dark, and I got by this banana plantation, and it was too late to get a bus back. So this guy put me up on his bed in the banana plantation, along with his roommate, who was a drunk. And then I got up early next morning, and I left. And on the way there, I passed these huge trucks with these enormous trees that have been cut down. There is a lot of illegal logging in that area and all over Costa Rica, and I don't know if that was legal or illegal, but it seemed a shame.
One of the things I normally ask my guests is kind of what guidebooks they use and what do the guidebooks recommend that were a waste of time. That seems like an unfair question to ask you. What, as you were researching the guidebook, what were you pleased that you were able to discover that you felt that, especially when you first did this 15 years ago, really wasn't being covered about Costa Rica?
I think that some of the smaller places, and I think it's a really great thing to be able to go to places and stay at hotels that are run by locals, or some of them are run by foreigners, but they still employ locals and give locals positions as guides and so forth. So I thought that's different than other places in the experience that you would have in an all-inclusive hotel in the Dominican Republic, say, where your main
the real
contact
resort
of locals would be at the aerobics classes or something.
Do one or two of them stand out for you that you could mention for us and tell us a little more about?
Okay, well, for example, I could think of a place called Hacienda Baru near Dominicao, and this guy, Jack Ewing, he was kind enough to give me the picture of the owls, which he took in his reserve that he put up there, and he came down there as a cattle farmer, and he became interested in the environment and reforestation, and has this reserve that they've reforested, and he's able to generate income in order to keep the property going through these canopy tours that he runs. And he has a number of trails that go to the beaches and so forth, and it's right near a surfing village of Dominical.
And canopy tours, I think a lot of people are going to be familiar with that term already, but some may not be. So can you describe what a canopy tour is?
Canopy tour is basically they sling a cable over a canyon, and you clamp yourself onto the cable, and you ride across the canopy screaming and your adrenaline going up to maximum. And it doesn't have a whole lot to do with visiting the rainforest, really, but a lot of Americans seem to like, and Europeans seem to like, getting their adrenaline up and having an adventure. But there's also these places, some of them have canopy bridges also, so you can walk across the bridge, which is a little bit more sensible, perhaps, from the aspect of, say, bird watching or looking at nature. Also, there's tree climbing and canyoning. Canyoning, you go down the side of a canyon, or can go into a cave. Tree climbing, you know, you're pulled up to a tree platform.
If I were to go down to Costa Rica from the United States, where I live, what kind of surprises would I run into?
Well, I think that one thing you would be surprised is that the prices often aren't that low, which is kind of unfortunate in a way. So you do have to spend some money there. And I think that Costa Rica is often portrayed as being a very safe place, but you do need to watch your stuff on the beaches, and there are little tricks they pull like everywhere else. So for example, you get a flat tire and then you pull over and then somebody comes over to help you. Those may be people that punctured your tire and are trying to rip you off while you're distracted. That's a common scam. Because it is a tourist area, there's a lot of people from other countries, say, who don't have as many tourists, like Colombia, who like to come to Costa Rica just for that reason. So I would be careful and expect to spend more money. In fact, the Costa Rican colón just revalued upward 5% against the U.S. dollar. But most of the prices are set in dollars, so it shouldn't affect you by that huge of an amount. And the standard of living is a little bit higher than elsewhere in Central America. So prices do tend to be a bit higher, say, than Guatemala. Say they're on the level of, say, Belize. So I think that you might be surprised that the roads aren't great. That's one reason why it's a good idea not to try to go to too many places or too many places that are far away from each other.
Right.
And I think you might be surprised that the people are very friendly if you haven't been in a lot of developing countries.
And when tourists go down right now and they're going down to swim or they're going down to do the zip line or the canopy tour, what do they miss about Costa Rica?
I think that it helps if you can hang out a bit and not be on such a tight schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you're going to stay in a resort, you're probably not going to see as much wildlife as if you stay in a rainforest lodge or in a small community lodge.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Costa Rican cuisine. You talked about don't worry too much about the food. It sounded like you were saying if you want good food, go elsewhere. But is there something that you really like about the Costa Rican food?
Well, the Costa Rican food is fairly simple.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about the basic, like, so-called casado, which is rice and beans and a side dish.
Mm-hmm.
It's palatable. Often, if you're staying in a remote area, they can't get things that easily. However, in the upscale resorts, they do make more of an effort now to come up with higher quality cuisine. And some of them, you know, have really excellent food. And there are a lot of Italians who moved there to escape Berlusconi. And they also have opened restaurants. And on the Caribbean coast, they have a Jamaican influence, so they have rice and beans with coconut milk, which is very tasty. But that said, it's not a five-star Michelin restaurants for the most part. There are some gourmet restaurants, but that's not a real reason to go to Costa Rica.
And then you talked about getting around and that the roads aren't that good. Do you normally, when you go down, get around by bus?
I get around by bus and sometimes by plane. Bus service is quite good to the main areas. You do need to be aware, as in every other country, where your things are. Don't take them for granted.
Sure.
There have been known to be thefts, and watch when you get getting off the bus and so forth, because people have noticed that there are tourists that come there with a lot of money and special expensive equipment. So be careful.
Can you talk about some of the different areas in Costa Rica? Can you lay out the country for us?
It's hard to go into detail in this time frame about every single area. However, first of all, you know, San Jose is an okay place to visit for a day or two, but it's not New York City or Paris. And like the Jade Museum, which exhibits this pre-Columbian jade that's really wonderful, there's a nice art museum, there's a national museum, and there's a gold museum. And there are some pleasant places to stay in and around San Jose. The area that San Jose is in, it's a bit higher. It's the most populated area of the country. It's called the Central Plateau or Meseta Central. And there are a few towns such as Heredia around that are nice to visit. Atenas is another nice one. There are some bed and breakfasts and so forth in the area. The Orosi Valley is a nice area to stay in, a good way to start or finish your trip. You can fly into the Liberia National Airport, but that's probably more for charters and more for package tourists that want to stay in resorts, although it is another alternative, definitely. The trip across to the Caribbean coast is quite nice. You pass through Braulio Carrillo National Park, which has this wonderful rainforest with mist, and then you go down over the hills. There used to be a train before the earthquake that you could take there. It would take you over to that coast. That coast is the whole Caribbean coast, Tortuguero National Park, which is probably slightly over-touristed at this point. Canals lead up to it. There's a lot of wildlife up there. Further from there is Barra del Colorado, which is another national park. And then the town of Limon, which is not a great place to visit. And farther south from Limon are Cahuita and Puerto Viejo, which used to be only, I think you need to take a boat to get there.
Uh-huh.
Just a couple of decades ago, and now they have DSL. So Cahuita is a cool place. The government tried to arbitrarily raise the park fees, $15 per day per person for foreigners, of course, not for Costa Ricans, for foreigners to visit. And these people in Cahuita, they were dependent upon backpackers. They said, no way. They took over the park on their end. It's now by donation, and they keep that end clean of the park. And it's a nice little promenade along the beach there, Cahuita National Park. It's a pretty mellow town. Just stay away from the town center where they've got this noisy bar. And then if you go to Puerto Viejo, that's kind of the happening spot. Used to be a lot quieter and nicer, in my opinion, but still has a lot to offer.
So Puerto Viejo would be Old Port.
Yes.
Okay.
And you can go from there down to Manzanillo, which is the entrance to the Gandoca Manzanillo Refuge there. And this area called the Northern Zone, it's not too far from San Jose, and there are a number of lodges up there, such as Rara Avis, where you take a tractor. A tractor pulls a cart that you sit in for about an hour on a rough road, and then you walk for a while, and when you get to the lodge, that's one of the more adventurous lodges. Going towards the west, Lake Arenal, which is an artificial lake, which has become very popular largely because of the volcano, which you often can't see, but sometimes can see early in the morning, and sometimes not. But the volcano is active, so depending upon where you are, you can often see some lava flow at night, and that's quite impressive.
Hmm.
And north of there is the Cano Negro National Wildlife Refuge. There are any number of parks and reserves in Costa Rica, and they're declaring parks and reserves all the time. However, they aren't always well-funded, and sometimes they haven't even paid for most of the land in the reserve. They've just sort of arbitrarily expropriated it, but not paid the landowners, which causes a great deal of acrimony at times. Guanacaste, which is the area in the northwest, including the Nicoya Peninsula, which is probably the most cultural area in Costa Rica because it used to be part of Nicaragua. That area has a Santa Rosa National Park, which is a very nice place, a Rincon de la Vieja, which is a national park surrounding a volcano, Lomas Barbudal, which is another nice reserve, the Miravalles Protected Zone, which surrounds Miravalles Volcano. There are any number of beaches along the coast. A lot of them don't have a lot of character just because they are basically small villages or people lived inland, and then the foreigners came and they kind of built these hotels. So you have more like the restaurants are in the hotels or they're run by foreigners, and a lot of them are run by Europeans. And it tends to be a little bit more expensive area of the country, I would say. Playa Nosara is one of the better surfing beach villages, and a place called Laguna Lodge has a nice reserve there. Osteonau, near it, is a place where sea turtles come to nest, and the locals have an agreement where they can harvest part of the sea turtle eggs, and they have a few hotels there. And there are a few other places like that, mostly popular with surfers along that coast. And you have to be careful because people have been known to get caught in riptides and drown. And some beaches are safer than others, and there aren't very many lifeguards.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the coast, there's port city of Punta Arenas, which is not the most salubrious place to visit. And then further down the coast is Jaco Beach, which is kind of an over-touristed, not perhaps the best place to visit if you want to experience Costa Rican nature. And then going further down the coast, the south, you have Manuel Antonio, which has a national park and has a lot of hotels around there. But the park is quite small and there are a lot of hotels. Dominical, which is a surfing village. Further south is the Osa Peninsula. And then it has Corcovado National Park, which is probably the nicest of the more extensive parks. And there are quite a few lodges around there, and you could go trekking through the park, but you need to make arrangements in advance. And there are also some places more towards the center of the country, across from the Oso Peninsula there on the mainland, that are more remote, including the beach village of Zancudo, which is named after the mosquito.
You've been going down to Costa Rica for 15 years. You're in the fifth edition of the book. How has it changed?
Well, I would say that it was less expensive. When I started, there were not nearly as many hotels as there are now. There were also not as many little bed and breakfasts and lodges that really give the country its distinctiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I would say there was probably less crime, although I wouldn't say there was no crime.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the roads haven't improved much.
Well, they do get a lot of rain, at least in some areas of the Caribbean coast. So that makes it a little harder.
And they had flooding this year also.
Yeah, they lost the road between San Jose and Puerto Limon when we were there, at least temporarily. And as we wrap this up, any particular moment you can think of when you were down in Costa Rica and you thought, only in Costa Rica could you be seeing this, doing this?
I wouldn't say that only in Costa Rica, because neighboring countries perhaps have the same things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you know, when you see a toucan flying from tree to tree or scarlet macaws or things of that nature, those are unique to Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm.
And surrounding countries, and although there are macaws in other areas of South America and so forth. But I would say the nature is what really gives the country its distinctiveness.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show, and I'll put a link in the show notes to your guidebook, Explore Costa Rica. And our guest again has been Harry Pariser. And Harry, thanks very much for being on the show.
Oh, you're most welcome, and I hope your guests enjoy their visit to Costa Rica.
Thanks very much. I have one internet resource for you today, and that's coming from jauntlet.com. Jauntlet, in the way they describe it, is a free and easy-to-use tool for travelers that lets you create an interactive travel plan. You can take this travel plan and you can put it on your blog, your Facebook, your MySpace, or whatever. It shows maps and locations that you're planning to go to, and it uses other websites such as Hostelworld, Travelocity, and Kayak to search for hostels, hotels, flights, etc. to put together this plan. So check that out at jauntlet.com. The first news that I have, and news from the community, is that I want to congratulate the three winners of the book promotion we were doing. And the book, again, was Andrew Darlow's book, Inkjet Tips and Techniques, an Essential Printing Resource for Photographers. So congratulations to John Coffey, who was a previous guest on the show talking about Philadelphia, and to Rod from Utah and Mary from Texas. Congratulations to all three of you. Your books are in the mail. If you're feeling left out by the book promotion, or you're looking to get a copy of the book that we talked about today about Costa Rica, all of the books that have been referenced on the Amateur Traveler can be found in the new Amateur Traveler store. So go to amateurtraveler.com, click on store, and you'll get an Amazon store that shows you all the books that the authors we've talked about, guidebooks that have been recommended by our guests, as well as some books that I've read specific to travel or to language learning that I'm recommending. So check that out just in time for Christmas. I got a letter this week from Ksenia, who is a listener in Russia, which in itself is very cool, but Ksenia had this to say. I've started listening to your podcast 2 months ago, and I want to thank you for the highest professionalism in your shows. They're really fantastic, and I'm waiting for your new episodes, which can give great info for travel. Since I'm a travel manager for an IT company, your show is of great help to me. And by the way, I thought you might be interested in some info regarding Berlin, though you surely might know that what I'm going to tell. I've been there this September and tried to find a good guide for me in our hostel and were advised to take a free tour. It was totally awesome. Great speaker, gave us a wonderful 3.5-hour tour through all of Mid and East Berlin historic places. The idea of a free tour is that it's for you to decide whether the tour was good or not and whether to pay for it or not. I like the idea and the quality of the tour, so it was really worth it. Here's the link for it, and I'll put the link that Ksenia has sent on the show notes. And by the way, they provide such tours in other European cities, so it's a good service to take. So I thought it might be useful for people who come to Berlin now. Thanks very much. That sounds like a great resource. And I certainly think that people will appreciate something where they get to decide the value of it, and it sounds like a terrific value. Thanks again for writing. And with that, we'll wrap up the show. If you do like the show, I could still use some additional reviews in the iTunes music store so that the show would show back up on the list of 15 featured travel podcasts. It's fallen off the list because I haven't begged for reviews recently. If you are interested in sending me an email like Ksenia, the email address is host@amateurtraveler.com, or again, feel free to leave me a comment on the comment line, which is 408-8494-POD. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today. The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.